Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
You can buy almost anything on eBay, and in the years ahead, if we do nothing more than stay the course in our ways of life on Earth, we just may need to be trying to find an extra Earth for sale to meet all of our needs. We're using up the living systems, and we're running out of time. When we return, we talk with Steve Goldfinger about our global footprint that is trampling our hopes for a sustainable future. That's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. Here it is 2006, we're facing an election in just a couple of weeks. People are really talking about important issues. But there probably is no more important issue than the real future of not only the United States and people here, but as well, literally, the living systems around the planet. And just today, as a matter of fact, just a few hours back, there was a news conference in which the future of the planet was being discussed in a new report that's been presented primarily the work of the World Wildlife Federation, and as well a group called the Global Footprint Network. And joining us now to discuss what is so important to our future is Steve Goldfinger, who is a senior scientist with the Global Footprint Network. Steve, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney. Glad to talk with you.
Why don't you give us an overview?
Global Footprint Network, to start with, is a nonprofit international organization that is working to make ecological limits central to decision making. And the way we do that is through a measure called the ecological footprint, which measures human demand on the planet. And it does this by looking at the amount of productive area on the planet, forests, cropland, fisheries, pasture, that are required to produce all the resources that we're using in society, so all the resources that flow through our economy, and to absorb our waste, particularly the carbon dioxide we produce from burning fossil fuels. So in this report, we're looking at where we are today. The report is released by one of our partner organizations, WWF, the Global Conservation Organization. And essentially the report looks at two measures, the Living Planet Index, which is their measure of the health of ecosystems, and it looks at populations of ecosystems and how the number of individuals in a population, whether it's terrestrial or marine or freshwater species, has changed over time. And what they're finding is a rather serious decline from 1970 to 2003, the last year we report on, of about 30%. So there's been a drop of 30%. At the same time, humanity's ecological footprint, the demand we're placing on ecosystems, so it's kind of a measure of pressure on ecosystems, has increased from approximately using the resources of the equivalent of a half a planet in 1961 to about a planet and a quarter today. So that's a rather large increase.
And what ultimately you project is that if the trend continues, and we're talking about trend lines here, which are reversible and changeable, and that's the important another aspect that is important, by the year 2050, at the same rate, it would take two planets to keep us sustainable. That's an unworkable scenario.
Exactly. What we've done in this report is we've looked at actually three scenarios. In the first one, we've looked at business as usual. And to do that, we took projections, very moderate projections about growth and changes in consumption and changes in the planet's productivity that come from the United Nations. So this is actually what the United Nations expects to happen.
Right.
Based on those projections, we calculate what humanity's footprint would be as we move forward through the century up until 2050, at the half-century mark.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that while today we're already using about a planet and a quarter's equivalent of resources, which means, incidentally, that it would take the planet about a year and 3 months to produce all the resources we're now using in a single year. By 2050, according to the UN projections, it would take two planets. So it would take two full years of the planet's productivity to provide what we're using in a single year. In a sense, we'd be operating at an ecological deficit. It's like in financial terms, instead of living off our interest, we would now be invading our principal. That has serious consequences for the ecosystems that support us in terms of Would they become depleted? Could we even get that far? And also the accumulation of waste, such as carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and the corresponding impacts on a planet that result, such as climate change.
And the thing that concerns me as a scientist is the fact that these living systems upon which we all depend, they can go into exponential decline, which is there's such an interrelationship between living systems that it's impossible really to predict what could happen if there is a serious change in this rate of decline. And that really concerns me. I don't even think that it's possible to address that effectively.
Well, that's exactly right. It is impossible to predict. And, in fact, we don't even attempt to predict. So
right. The
ecological footprint is really a historical accounting tool. It looks at how much nature we have and compares it with how much we're using. We don't attempt to predict how this is going to impact ecosystems in the future. We do these projections just based on the UN assumptions and saying how much would we be using in 2050 if, in fact, UN projections are correct. What that's going to mean in terms of the decline of the planet's ecosystems and potential losses, possibly permanent, to future productivity, nobody really knows.
What would the world look like to us in 2050, to the people there at that time, and hopefully we may still be around? But what would that world start to feel like?
I'm not sure I want to even guess, and I'm not even sure we can get to that point. You mentioned that this is, and I think I said before, this is one of three scenarios we've looked at. So we don't necessarily have to continue on this path into the future. We can change course. And in the report, we present two alternatives, one in which we change course fairly slowly, the idea being that perhaps that requires less economic investment up front. It's perhaps a little less risky economically. However, we would remain in what we call overshoot. Running an ecological deficit year after year for a much longer period of time, essentially accruing a larger ecological debt and placing more total pressure on ecosystems. So the lower economic risk initially must be counterbalanced against what might be a greater ecological risk in the long run. And the other scenario, a kind of rapid reduction scenario, we look at how things might change more quickly, where we would need to invest more upfront economically to make the changes that are necessary, for example, in our infrastructure, but we would get out of overshoot much more quickly and therefore put our ecosystems at less risk in the long term.
Obviously, a huge part of the problem is the fact that the world is developing very quickly. China and India are coming online at in a dramatic pace. Consumerism, unfortunately, is built into those models of the future, and I think that's where the rubber meets the road. And that is the fact that it is this consumerist worldview that really puts everything at risk, particularly as these new nations come online. How do you hope, or what would be your recommendations on how we deal with that vision of the future in terms of what the world should look like? That is to say that everybody should have a really much higher standard of living.
Well, I think one important thing to recognize is it's not so much we're all interested in consuming more, it's we're all interested in having great lives. So the question is, and the real sort of challenge of sustainability or sustainable development, is how can we all live great lives but do so within the means of one planet? And in fact, one of the things we do in the report is we look at where countries are today in terms of meeting two what you might call minimum criteria for sustainability. One is using the Human Development Index, which is created by the UN Development Program. It's a kind of measure of quality of life, and saying if you're under, if you are over 0.8 on that index, according to UN, you're living in high development. Longevity is good, health is good, a decent income per person. So ideally, for one criteria for sustainable development, then would be having an HDI, a Human Development Index score, better than 0.8 as a nation. And the other thing that you want to do is be living within the means of the Earth. In footprint terms, that means you want to be consuming less than what's available per person on the planet, which is, we do the report in hectares, it's a scientific report, 1.8 global hectares with average productivity, which is about 4.4 acres. So that's what's kind of available per person. And when we look at where we are today, we find the less wealthy countries in the world, countries in Africa, countries in Asia Pacific, many of them are living where their average per person footprint is lower than what's available per person on the planet, yet their level of development is still below what the UN would consider high development. What we find, unfortunately, is that as countries are improving their level of development, they're also at the same time increasing their footprint. And the latter seems to even accelerate, so you start getting to a point of diminishing returns where smaller and smaller increases in your level of development are achieved with higher and higher footprint. Now, that said, there are plenty of examples of countries who have high-level development with much smaller footprints than, for example, the United States. All you need to do is look at Italy. It's not necessarily that they set out to do that. It's in part a historical accident, a function of the fact that they built walkable cities where they don't have to get in their cars to drive everywhere. So I think part of the answer to your question is how do we move forward? How do we have great lives and still fit on the planet? It has to do with urban design. We want to build walkable cities. It has to do with the infrastructure we put in place today. In the report, we call it paying attention to slow things first. Those aspects of our infrastructure that change very slowly, like the power plants and the roads and the bridges and the cities we build, because whatever we put in place today is going to last 50, 70, maybe 100 years and largely determine the resource requirements for the rest of the century. So if we are building infrastructure that requires a high throughput of resources in order to continue to operate, we're locking ourselves into a high footprint and into overshoot for a long time to come. On the other hand, if we start building infrastructure today that can operate on very resource efficiently, it's going to enable us to start moving towards an ideal sustainable economy.
I thought that was a very interesting concept, that as we look into these the lifespan of various support systems, such as power plants, some of these reach out 75 to 100 years. If
exactly.
if we build them into systems that require oil or natural gas, we're going to have to supply that for that period of time. So this is a critical moment in our history to make wise decisions and change the nature of that future demand on the sustainables for us. This is a very, very comprehensive report. For people who want to download a copy of that, where might they go?
They can go to our website, which is www.footprintnetwork.org. And they will see the report right there on the first page of our website, be able to click on it, and it will take them to a download.
Great. Now, if for people who are just sitting around listening to this show today, what would you say would be three important things that they should really seriously consider within the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years to help turn the tide?
Well, one of the things that you can see in the report is the breakdown of the footprint into its components. So what aspects of our activities are putting the greatest pressure on the planet, and which of those components have been growing most rapidly over the time period we're looking at from 1961 to 2003. And not surprisingly, the largest component and showing the greatest growth is the carbon footprint, the footprint that results from emissions of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere as a result of burning fossil fuels. So I think the big hitter, and the one that's often easiest, in fact, to change is our carbon footprint. How can people do that? It's through the daily activities, the daily choices that they make. I mean, some of it is fairly simple. You can hang your clothes on a line instead of putting it in a dryer, which in fact is very energy intensive. You can decide instead of running 6 errands and 6 trips with my car, I can do maybe combine them into 1 trip and drive that much less. You know, it may seem like a small thing, but when it's replicated by the behavior of millions of people, it makes an enormous difference. But buying behavior, buying food locally, for example, often means that food is transported far fewer miles. There's fewer, what they call food miles, embedded in it. That's one way of doing it. Purchasing decisions. When you buy your next car, do you focus on, you know, getting the most horsepower or getting the best fuel mileage? So I think those are some of the easy things that we could do. Other things that impact people's footprint, for example, are, and again, a dietary fact, the amount of meat you eat. Generally, meat, because it requires a lot more calories going into it per calories you get out, means that it places a larger demand on both pasture and on the cropland that's used to produce the grain and other products that are used to feed the animals that you're eating from meat. So that's another example.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. You're really trying to promote a quick, rapid turn around such that we can meet the, we can change this and turn this trend around by the year 2050 so that we're not doubling our needs. On a global basis, in terms of leadership, what's going to be required?
Tough question. First, I want to clarify the Global Footprint Network actually doesn't promote any particular solution. We are really more the impartial account.
Fair enough.
We say, okay, these are the numbers. You have the discussion. You make the policy decisions. So some are policy decisions. Some things are ethical choices. For example, do we want to have large vertebrate animals left on the planet? If we do, we might want to leave some of the Earth's productivity that we're now using for reserve them for the use of wild species to preserve our biodiversity, which some people think is in fact one of our most valuable assets and critical to stabilizing the ecosystems on which we depend. So that said, I think it's going to take a lot of tough discussions. As we point out in the report, doing the sciences in a way is the easy part. Coming up with agreements on how much we're going to shrink our global footprint and then how we're going to share that shrinkage among countries, among regions, that's the tough discussions that nations have to have. Similar in a way to the kinds of discussions that went on for Kyoto in terms of how we're going to shrink our carbon emissions over the years and hopefully a bit more successfully. In the report, we do outline three different strategies that might be adopted for how the reduction in footprint might be shared, although we're not saying one is better or worse than the other. We're just pointing out alternatives. So, for example, like Kyoto, the reductions could be shared, say, by regions in terms of what they're currently using, everybody would drop by a certain percentage. Another way of doing it might be to say, okay, in each region, there's a certain amount of productive capacity. You have a certain amount of forest and cropland and pasture, and perhaps your footprint should be based on how much productive capacity you have, kind of a geographical approach to it. A third approach, which some people have advocated, is that perhaps we should do this on a per-person basis. Everybody is entitled, according to this approach, to the same amount of the Earth's productivity, and therefore, you know, a country with a larger population would be allocated a larger footprint. Obviously, large political hurdles for any one of these positions. There could be other positions. There could be combinations. It could be one of these along with rights to share and trade allocations. That I don't know, but I know it is going to be a long and difficult route, but it's one that's critical for us to move on rather quickly if we want to get out of overshoot and avoid depletion of our ecosystem.
Steve Goldfinger, senior scientist at Global Footprint Network. You guys have done really a lot of terrific work. You've brought the information to the table. You've made it available literally to the entire world. I'm going to be one who's going to really promote leaders around the world to step up and take all of this very seriously and find creative ways for us to work together so that this mission to achieve sustainability in a reasonable future and reduce our footprint is achievable. Because if it's not, as you say, it's a world we really don't want to think too much about right now. So, Steve Goldfinger, thanks so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Great, and thank you so much, Sydney, for having me.
Leadership? We can all see the effects that ill-advised leadership can have on our world. And with an election just around the corner, next we head on out to New Mexico and hear from a powerful rancher who thinks it's time to stand up against the roughshod treatment that landowners and ranchers are experiencing from the natural gas companies. And she's not going to take it anymore.
Monday morning, crack of dawn, I'm already dressed. Grandma's making fried potatoes, wearing her Sunday best. She said, son, go wash your hands, fix your silver plate. We got to go into town today, and you know we can't be late. Where's Charlie?
Where's Charlie?
We gotta get him dressed and fed. Don't you tell me that boy is still in bed. Hey, bang on the door, wake up Charlie. Tell that boy to rise and shine.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how,
Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.